This piece has been brought to you by Bonnie Plants, bonnieplants.com.
I'm Dave Arnold, host of Cooking Issues. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to For Men About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts through this weekly journey of all things fermentable.
Archived right here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org and on Stitcher and iTunes.
All right, so as many of you know, HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a 501c3, and we're supported in part by you guys. So Chris and I just renewed our membership this week, and we would love for you guys to become members, too. There's a variety of different membership levels.
This is a member-supported organization, and we need your help. It's that time of year. Please donate. You can donate through heritageradionetwork.org/donate, and members of Heritage Radio Network get
special discounts.
What else?
Your membership's tax deductible.
Oh, yeah.
And you're supporting a fantastic array of great shows that are on this network every week, including For Men About It.
That's right. That's right. What's happening in town? Got anything?
No.
I do. We are having an event called Kegs and Cluckers at Brooklyn Brewery on July 14th. This is a benefit justfood.org, which is also where you can find tickets for it. But basically, Kegs and Cluckers. What's Kegs and Cluckers? As many of you know, spent grain is still good as chicken feed. And so Kegs and Cluckers is an event to kind of put urban chicken keepers in touch with local homebrewers, and hopefully we'll establish a lot of relationships and be able to trade spent grain for eggs and chicken fun stuff. Speaking of grain, what's going on, Mary? What is this show?
All right, so tonight we're very lucky to have two different maltsters on. So we're starting with Twyla Henley from Grouse Malting. Hi, Twyla.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. So let's tell you, we first met you at the Craft Brewers Conference that was put on by the Brewers Association in Denver, Colorado earlier this year. And we attended a very special seminar on craft maltsters in America. And each, I think we've mentioned this on the show before, but just as a reminder, each of the craft maltsters sent in one of your grains, and then, one of your grains, and then New Belgium Brewing Company brewed a single malt beer, the exact same single malt beer, but with different grains from all over the country. And Twyla from Grouse Malting participated in this project. So you guys are really unique in that you're a gluten-free malt house, right?
Correct. specialize in all gluten-free grains. So we submitted our pale millet malt for that smash, that single malt and single hop brew that New Belgium did to present at the Craft Brewers Conference.
How long have you been open as a malt house?
We officially opened last year.
And are you
2013.
And you are solely gluten-free, right?
Correct, designated gluten-free.
That's fantastic. How's it been going?
Excellent. You know, I started this business I was working on starting this business for the last several years, just proving that our products, our malt, can make really high-quality gluten-free beers, and that's starting to catch on.
Absolutely. And that beer stood up and was awesome right next to the barley.
Yeah. You were the only non-barley beer or non-barley grain that was used in this project. And, yeah, that was actually one of my favorites. Millet is a very... it doesn't taste exactly like barley, but it definitely stood up. It has a very unique flavor, very nice for a lot of beers. I think we were kind of drinking these different beers and saying, you know, what styles we could see using those in. And I think that would be, you know, be very nice in a lot of styles, particularly Belgian ales.
Exactly.
So you not only make the pale millet, but you make four other, shades or a range of millet. And then you also have buckwheat. So tell us a little bit about your other grains.
Well, for the millet, we offer several specialty millets. We offer a light, a medium, and a dark roast, and some others. It's an American roast that we've been playing with, as well as a French roast. We've had some really great feedback from all of these grains, just brewers mixing and matching them, making anything from, you know, a saison to an amber or a brown, and even an oatmeal stout. So that's been really extraordinary. In the millet categories, we've also been doing some light and medium and dark crystals, as well as a newly released Vienna millet malt.
Oh, very cool.
Yes. And so for the buckwheat, we offer buckwheat, malted buckwheat, as well as roasted buckwheat. So one thing that I like to suggest to brewers is using just a little bit of buckwheat, because it can really help add to the head retention as well as the overall body and mouthfeel of the beer. So I highly suggest using a combination of grains with millet and buckwheat, and we're also working on some other grains. So
very cool. What inspired you to start a gluten-free malt house?
Well, I was new to Colorado. I moved out to Fort Collins from Ohio and was just really fascinated by the beer scene. I was studying food science and food safety at Colorado State University. I was getting my master's there, and I was fortunate enough to be able to take the brewing science and technology course that CSU offers. And that really just opened my eyes and my heart to the joy and the love of craft beer. And at that time, I had a friend who had a gluten intolerance. She was celiac. So she was telling me how terrible it was to be celiac, because all of the craft beers that were gluten-free on the market were really terrible. So I felt bad for her, and I went out and I needed to confirm that, in fact, you know, these beers didn't taste very good. And so I went to the liquor store and bought a few beers, and I was just disgusted at how terrible the beers were. And at that time, I started to put one and two together, realizing that, okay, you know, these beers, these gluten-free beers on the market taste so bad for a few reasons. And one of them quite possibly could have been that they were made from syrups, rice or sorghum or other sugar, other sugars, but not malt.
Right.
So I was looking for gluten-free malt, and came up empty-handed after Google search after Google search. And so I decided that I needed a malt. So I made contact with a local farmer, Jean Hediger, from Golden Prairie out in Nunn. And she was so gracious to me, and a friend that was working on a project with me at the time gave us some millet and started malting millet. Little did I know at that time that Colorado was the nation's largest producer of millet. Colorado produces 60 to 70% of the nation's entire millet crop. And that millet could make a great tasting beer once it's been malted correctly and brewed using the right parameters. And most importantly for me, that I had an autoimmune disease that I've been struggling with for almost a decade, and that by eating the gluten-free diet, completely cured that autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
So after that series of events, I started looking at malting commercially.
And being
that's how I got into it.
That's amazing.
I want to know a little bit more about how you learned specifically how to malt millet, and what I guess where your millet is available in the buckwheat.
Well, I started, I just researched malting of gluten-free grains, and luckily there's been quite a bit of research done in academia about the optimization of malting gluten-free grains, anything from quinoa to oats and obviously millet and buckwheat. There was a researcher at Colorado State back in the 90s that had spent quite a bit of time on sorghum and millet, so I had that background research, and then I was also fortunate enough to be kind of taken under the wing by a few craft maltsters, Andrea and Christian from Valley Malt, and Lance Jurgensen from Rebel Malting in Reno, Nevada, and was able to get in touch with them. I actually went out to Reno and malted on Lance's system, Rebel system, and so really get my hands dirty in malting. I also studied at the Canadian Malting Barley Technical Center, did a short course there, and they kind of specialized it for gluten-free malting and brewing at my request. So kind of a story behind that. And then our products are available through Grouse, so anyone can check out our website and send us an email. Anyone from a commercial brewer to a home brewer, we can supply you with malt.
And that website is grouseco.com, right?
Correct. grouseco.com.
How much are you malting at currently, and what are your plans for the future?
Well, I'm excited to announce that our new system is almost up and running. We started malting on a micro malting system that was a unimalting system. So what that means is that we did all three of the steps of malting, steeping, germinating, and kilning all in the same tank. Well, that was really great because we didn't have to move the grain physically from one vessel to another throughout the processes. It tied up our system for almost a week. So what we've done with this most recent scale-up is now we're able to have continuous production. So we've added a steep tank as well as a germination floor, and we'll be able to finish about a ton of malt every other day.
Oh, wow.
So it substantially increased our production.
Absolutely. And how has the demand been as far as, like, moving what you currently operate with?
Huge. We're still pretty small, so we're not in the spectrum of things. We're not really producing a whole lot yet. I mean, a 100-barrel system would max us out of production pretty easily. So we're setting our sights pretty high and looking into the future and just making sure that we're going to be able to keep up with the future orders that we're expecting.
Very cool. I think it's also important to note that you have some breweries that are using your malt in non-gluten-free beers, so that they're using your malt as kind of in the mix along with traditional barley.
Yes, we absolutely have had some brewers go that route, but I would say the majority of our customers are breweries or home brewers that are looking to make 100% gluten-free beers. Element out in Massachusetts, Element Brewing Company has made Plasma IPA, and they're using our millet and our buckwheat for that. And we have just kind of showing the coast-to-coastness of our spread here. We have Alpenglow Brewery out in the Bay Area that will be coming out with a beer very soon that's made with our products as well. So just keep your eyes peeled. There's more coming out in the very near future.
I love it. If you had to describe the flavor of millet, your base malt millet, what are some adjectives?
Yeah, kind of the properties of millet.
Because I think a lot of people are unfamiliar with millet.
You know, it's our base, our pale millet. It is sweet. It definitely has a grainy character. Honestly, if done correctly, it is very, very, very similar to a barley malt. Mm-hmm. Should have no off flavors. Really not very toasted at all. It's just our pale. It's just the base. So very sweet, very pleasant.
Just a sweet, grassy kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you recommend if somebody is interested in starting to brew gluten-free beers? What are some very basic tips on working with millet and buckwheat that you would offer them?
Well, I would suggest a few things. Number one, our grains, especially millet, it's just a smaller size, so that's something that we really need to take into consideration when we're milling. Obviously, the milling settings are different. We need to be pretty careful when we're recirculating and going into the lauter. Definitely want to avoid a stuck mash at all possible. Although for that New Belgium brew, I will say that we did not use any filtering agents, and we lautered just fine. So And then the other thing is the gelatinization temperature. So I know this is getting a bit techy, and if anybody wants more information about this before they get their hands dirty and brewing gluten-free beer, I have all this information available in a packet that I send out to our new customers. But the gelatinization temperature, so the temperature that we want to reach in our mash, is higher than barley at this point in time. It's about 163 is what we recommend in order to get conversion.
Okay.
So that's really toeing the line right there with the brewer's window. So that has some implications as to whether or not you'd want to do a step mash in order to get the most bang for your buck, or perhaps holding the mash a little bit longer than someone typically would, possibly messing around, experimenting with a decoction. There's a whole handful of tricks that we can recommend in order to produce a great tasting beer.
Awesome.
I love this.
Yeah.
And I'm going to ask for that pamphlet very soon.
Well, thank you so much, Twyla. Good luck with your expansion and your new projects that you have going on.
Absolutely.
Thank you. My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Twyla.
I'm here. Have a great night.
You too. Bye. We'll be back after the break with Andrea Stanley from Valley Malt.
Hi, I'm Julia Tertian, host of Radio Cherry Bomb. HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a nonprofit organization, which means we depend on the support of members like you. The reason I support Heritage Radio Network is because I'm passionate about connecting women and food to an audience that supports them and their businesses. The best way you can support this program and others like it is to visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org and click the donate button to become a member today. Thank you for listening and thank you for your support.
When gardening is part of your life, it brings so much. Healthy eating, the freshest, most local produce, and playing in the dirt. At BonniePlants.com, you'll find all you need to succeed. When you grow Bonnie veggie and herb plants in beds or containers, you'll know where your food comes from. Homegrown veggies and herbs ready for cooking, eating, and enjoying. And you did it. So get growing with Bonnie Plants.
Reggie Watts, and you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Good evening. Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We just finished talking to Twyla Henley from Grouse Malting Company, an all gluten-free malting company. She does awesome stuff. You can find more of her stuff at grouseco.com, grouseco.com. And now online, we have our friend Andrea Stanley from Valley Malt. Hi, Andrea.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you, Mary?
Great. I'm so excited that we finally have you on. We've played an interview with you before from Craft Brewers Conference, and then you were at the National Homebrewers Conference that we went to a few weeks ago in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And you actually did, so you've been a maltster since 2009, is that correct?
2010. When we first started. Well, I was malting in my kitchen in 2009, but when we first started Valley Malt, it was in the fall of 2010.
Cool.
Malting in your kitchen. This is fun. How do you get started in that? And why that?
Because,
and how easy is it to do?
We went and bought a 50-pound bag of barley from a local farm in Northfield, Massachusetts, and wanted to homebrew some beers with it, with the idea that we were interested in maybe starting a malt house.
Mm-hmm.
So that was how it started in our kitchen.
And how many... how big is your malting operation now?
We're producing about a half mil of barley a year, so that's about 400,000 pounds of malt.
Cool. And you are doing some traditional floor malting as well, currently?
Yep. That just increased our capacity by about a ton a week by putting in a floor malting, 1,000-square-foot floor malting space in the attic of our malt house.
Awesome.
You just had an open house on summer solstice. How did that go?
We did. It was awesome. It was really awesome. Couldn't have asked for a more beautiful day.
Yeah.
And
do you have this open house yearly?
We are having another open house on October 5th. We have an annual event called Barley Fest. And so we'll have an open house as part of our Barley Fest this year on October 5th.
I like that. I will see you there.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I'm putting it on the calendar right now.
October 5th. Is it open to anybody in the area who's available to come? Is it a ticketed event?
It is an open event. It's free. We have all kinds of amazing beers from the breweries that we work with. So we'll have beers there from Cambridge Brewing Company, Wormtown, Jack's Abbey, Trillium. Mm-hmm. A lot of breweries actually we're working with in New York now. So we'll have, you know, a really eclectic variety of beers and some sausage from a new sausage bratwurst company out of Brooklyn called Starwurst.
Nice. Starwurst?
yep.
That's fun.
Russell is part of that. Yeah. So, so we'll basically be doing it's going to be beer and sausage and local wood-fired pizza and then, you know, kind of a mellow time, just mm-hmm. sort of celebrate the harvest. October is kind of a little bit of a mellow time for us.
Mm-hmm.
We've already harvested, and so we're just kind of enjoying the fact that harvest is over and beers are being brewed with 2014 grain, and kind of a nice family event.
And you source your grain from a number of locations, but you're pretty locally. Where are you getting your grain that you're malting?
Most of our grain is coming from... Well, a lot of it is coming from New York because New York is Western New York is kind of a traditional area that can produce good quality malting barley. Mm-hmm. So we work with Lakeview Organic Grains, the Martins family in Penn Yan. We work with Tor Oshner, who grows some really beautiful wheat and rye in Ithaca, New York. We work with a farm in Canastota, New York, the O'Mara family. And we grow about 100 acres ourselves of grain. So this year we'll have a pretty decent amount of the grain we're malting is stuff that my husband, Christian, grew. And we're working this year, too, with a couple of farms in Maine, up in the Aroostook area of Maine, which is kind of another area in New England that can grow pretty good grain.
Cool. Now, you do a variety of base malt as well as specialty grains, but we had talked a little bit about after the seminar, you did a historical brown malt with that you sent to Bell's Brewery and actually a home brewer brewed. So tell us a little bit about how you, the project that you did for NHC and how you went about that.
Well, that was really an awesome, awesome experience because I am a little bit of a history buff, so I like reading about historical references on malt. And brown malt, so it's called a couple of things. It's called brown malt, it's called snap malt, it's called porter malt, it's called blown malt. So those are kind of all in the same category of this type of malt that used to be produced starting in the 1700s in London that would make porter beer. And porter beer was made in a really interesting way also. So the process of making that malt and the process of brewing that beer are two processes that really are not being done on any kind of commercial scale at all anymore. So you can't really get yourself a true porter, London porter beer. John Mallett from Bell's Brewery, who is writing a book right now for the Brewers Association on malt, he had called me a few years back to discuss craft malting and our sort of emerging industry as craft malters. And he also was, for the book, and I think just personally interested in the history of malting, and said, hey, let's just do a malt history nerdy, geeky workshop at the Homebrewers Conference this year. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. We were joking around about, dressing up, and we were in costume of that era and that kind of thing. And our proposal got accepted, and then, the time actually came where we had to put this workshop together, and we were like, okay, well, what should we do? And I really wanted to make some more. I had made a couple of years ago for our Malt of the Month Club some brown malt, porter malt, and I wanted to continue to try to make it and recreate this malt. So basically, we found the correct type of wood that you're supposed to use to kiln or smoke this malt. And then we tried to create an old kiln of the process that would have been used. And then the guys at Bell's got together and did a homebrew batch, and they tried to recreate the brewing process as much as they could, kind of in from a historical perspective. And it was really interesting because Mary, you were there at the
yep.
conference, and the beers, you look at the analysis of both of those porters, because we had the porter that we made from our historic malt and our historic brewing, and then we also had Bell's porter. And, you look at the malt or the beer analysis on both of those, and they look very similar in a lot of ways. But when you tasted those two beers, they were strikingly different.
Yep.
And that, to me, is just really exciting to think about how, how different you could create a style of beer. And, both I thought were excellent.
I agree.
And the one that had the brown... the special malt that we made, to me, just had a lot of, smokiness to it, and I don't know, what else, what would you have to say about it?
Yeah, I did not bring my notes, but yeah, the one, it was notably smokier. Otherwise, I thought, the texture and kind of the mouthfeel were actually pretty similar to the two.
Yeah.
But it was cool, because, so you actually, you said you got the right kind of kiln, but you actually... or kilned wood, you actually did that particular malt over kind of an open fire pit, right? Outdoors.
Well, yeah. So we took cinder blocks and we created kind of like a little kiln, but the setup. But yeah, it would be kind of similar to making a grill out in your backyard or a fire pit. That was kind of how we kiln that malt. And of course, for us, just making a pale malt, it would take 24 to 36 hours to kiln. So to dry down that malt from a sprouted green malt to a dry product that you would use for brewing. And the porter malt that we made, or the brown malt that we made for that beer, that only ended out taking about 2 hours because the heat is so intense. Because you've got those logs of wood that are smoldering not very far from where you're drying down the grain. So it's kind of like a totally different process. And doing a little bit of historical research on it, it definitely was the case that in England you sort of had your malt houses that specifically made brown porter snap malt, and you had your malt houses that made pale malt. So, and it was probably because their kilns and their processes were a little bit, of a different design.
Mm-hmm. Now you're doing some other, you mentioned that you're doing some other historical malts for some brewers. So tell us a little bit about those projects.
Well, I just worked with Chris Loring at Notch, who I love to work with because he, I think has also a very creative mind when it comes to trying to recreate certain beers. And I think certainly having a malt house in the same state helps him to say, oh, yeah, I want to make a Berliner Weiss. So this is a beer that he made about a month ago. He made a Berliner Weiss. And he had gone to a talk several years back at, I'm not sure which conference it was. It might have been a Master Brewers conference or something like that. But he had sent me this presentation, how they were talking about using a particular type of malt called a chit malt. So basically, it's a much shorter period of sprouting the malt. And it gives the Berliner Weiss. So you would use a regular wheat malt in the Berliner Weiss, but then you'd also use a little bit of this chit malt, which I think because you're not modifying it as much or you're not sprouting it as much, there's more protein there. And I think that it was giving a little bit more head retention to the Berliner Weiss, which, you know, a traditional Berliner Weiss has like really, really nice head on it and really nice head retention. So anyways, he was really, we did that for him, which wasn't really all that hard to do. We did that with our normal, you know, process at the malt house. We just cut down on the amount of time that we malted that wheat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he seems really happy with it. I guess it was, you know, pretty successful, at least on the day that they brewed it. And then I think the beer should be coming out within the next couple of weeks. So
very cool.
Yeah, and then the other thing, the other historical malt I'd like to try, or, you know, we have done for some distilleries, is corn. So malting corn to make traditional American lagers.
Now these, the chit and the brown malt and the corn, these are these one-offs? Do you have intention to have them? Do you do these by order? Do you have intention to have them available year-round or as you have them?
I don't know. I don't think it would be. I think what we would like to do eventually is have a line of historical malts, mm-hmm. but I don't think that that's something that, I mean, the chit malt would be pretty easy to continue doing, but and the corn malt too would be pretty easy to continue doing as long as we had a really nice source of corn
right. Locally.
But the brown malt is going to, you know, if we really wanted to actually do that on any more than a homebrew scale, we would have to recreate a kiln.
Right.
That was
yeah. Yep.
So and we are. That is definitely
in the long term.
Yeah. Both right. Christian and I are, you know, he's the mechanical engineer and I'm the, you know, person that he has to deal with every day.
Yep.
Talking about stuff like this. So, we would like to be able to design a kiln that would be capable of making brown malt on a commercial basis. So we'll see.
Cool.
Kind of have to justify it, I guess.
Yep.
So you work with commercial breweries, and you have actually a great Find Our Malt page on your website. But a couple of homebrew stores also carry your malt. And you also have a Malt of the Month Club that I was a member of a couple of years ago that's also meant for homebrewers.
Yep. And the Malt of the Month is when we try to do a lot of our, that's kind of the channel for a lot of our research and development. It's, we'll try to make some of these crazy malts, and then they end up going to the Malt of the Month Club people. So,
and people experiment with them.
It's been a great way to get to know your malts. It's been a really awesome program.
Yeah, it's a fun program. And actually, today was the first pickup. So we kind of, you know, have it like a CSA. So we have, you know, you buy a share, and we try to represent what has been growing in this area, and those are the malts that we use. And we try to do, you know, we did Emmer and Spelt and some more heirloom land race varieties of grains. And, it's really fun because I love when Malt of the Month people come to pick up their shares and everything. It feels good to be connected that way.
It's pretty awesome, too. Also, just one of the things that I took home from your presentation at the Craft Brewers Conference was the about tasting the terroir and the difference between the same sort of base malt grain going on, but tasting the terroir, tasting where it's coming from, and it's a huge difference. These craft malts are what's going on right now is really exciting, and thank you for doing all this.
Yeah, did you got to taste the different beers at the Craft Brewers Conference?
At the Craft Brewers Conference, yes. I missed your seminar at the National Homebrewers Conference recently.
Yeah, I mean, what we did at the Craft Brewers Conference, to me, was just the tip of the iceberg, you know? It was five malt houses. We all malted a pale malt. We had it. New Belgium was, you know, gracious enough to brew five different beers with our malts and highlight the malt. So, you know, you really got to taste the difference of a pale beer brewed from a base malt from North Carolina versus Montreal versus Massachusetts versus Colorado.
Yeah.
And just see that difference. And, you know, it's hard to pinpoint where that difference is coming from, if it's coming from the variety of the grain, if it's coming from where the grain's being grown, or is it coming from the process that the malt house is using? You know, is that malt house floor malting or, you know, malting, you know, in a certain type of way, and how does that affect everything? And, you know, so to me it was just the tip of the iceberg, but it was great to see that. I guess the goal of that workshop was we were hoping that the beers would taste different, and I think, would you agree that they did?
Definitely.
Without a doubt. And so just as a home brewer, as a brewer at all, you can't just take a recipe and then, you know, pick random ingredients. It comes down to, I mean, it's cooking. You know, find the source of your ingredients, about the quality of the ingredients, and it's all going to make a difference.
Yeah. And I think for so long, people, you know, we call it base malt.
Right.
And it's like, it doesn't have to be base malt. It can actually be
the feature.
The face of your, you know, it's can be the character of your beer. It doesn't have to come from specialties or even hops. Right. Dare I say that?
What? Are you American? What is this?
You're never going to have me on the show again.
What kind of patriot are you?
I'm just saying, like, you know, I mean, really, that you could, and this is the thing I think that comes up a lot, is that these malts that are being made by us craft maltsters are pretty unique.
Yeah.
And for some palates, that's a hard thing to accept.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're used to a certain flavor or maybe lack of, and then now you're getting malt that has a lot going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be hard for a palate to get used to.
Well, they're distinctive. I mean, malt is obviously lending these beers a very unique, or can lend these beers a unique aroma and flavor that can't come from the yeast or the hops or the water, that right. are just from the malt. And with the amount of malts that the craft maltsters like you are producing now, not only are you producing things where malts that haven't been made in, I don't know, hundreds of years, but but also malts that are going to be new and special and exciting.
Yeah. No, I wanted to write a blog post about this, but I haven't had time. But it's really amazing. Like, one of my favorite stories is, like, the story of spelt, because spelt is this ancient wheat that actually grows really well in New England and in New York. And when we first started working with Lakeview in Penn Yan, Klaus Martins was saying, you know, get more brewers to use spelt, because spelt makes really good beer, because he's German. And in Germany, they make a beer called Dinkel beer, which is, Dinkel is the German word for spelt. And in the first couple of years that we were malting, we were just, like, trying to sell spelt, you know, and we had this bag of spelt that was, you know, we didn't have any reason to malt it. Finally, we malted it for the Malt of the Month Club, and, you know, I don't think a lot of people knew what to do with it, so they made saisons with it. And then Jack's Abbey came on the scene, and they started, you know, one of their flagship beers, Hoponius Union, has spelt in it. And so then they started buying spelt from us, like, on a monthly basis. And then out of a sudden, I don't know if it was because of them or what, but, like, all these other breweries and distilleries now want spelt from us. And so I look at that from, like, you know, just seeing the amount of spelt, you know, like if I look at our production and I see the amount of spelt we were malting in 2011 versus 2014, it's like 10 times the amount. And I just think, like, this is an expression of local, because spelt grows really well here. And now brewers are starting to use spelt. And are brewers in the Pacific Northwest using spelt as much as brewers are in New England? Probably not. Like, it's an expression of, like, what's available by the local malt house, which is an expression of what's available by the local farms. And, you know, so I feel like that's just one example of how, like, there's, like, a regional identity that's starting to form because, you know, local malt houses here and local brewers are interested in using local ingredients and, you know, the whole package, I guess. Consumers want to want to buy beer that is connected to agriculture and, you know, the whole story, I guess. So, so I don't know. That to me is like an exciting story about spelt, because it's kind of just highlights what we see, you know, with going on with our malt house.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
And that could happen with brown malt too. You know, if we get this kiln built.
Yep. That's still unsung.
We start rocking the brown malt. You never know. There could be a resurgence of traditional porter beers.
Mm-hmm.
I would support that after the seminar at NHC. Well, thank you so much, Andrea. You can go to valleymalt.com to find out more about Valley Malt, and we look forward to hopefully seeing you in October, if not before.
Absolutely.
Great.
Thank you, Andrea.
Great to talk with you, Chris.
Likewise.
Thanks for listening. So I lied last week, and next week we are having a show where we went to the Brooklyn Bruisers meeting. They had a sour beer club competition. It was absolutely awesome. So we have a lot of advice on brewing sour next week on Ferment About It.
Ferment About It, old beast.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Like a red-eyed wild stallion.